You're listening to Mad Radio. WMDX 1580 AM Columbus. W224 EG Madison. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A Secret Service agent won a hole ahead of former President Trump on the golf course Sunday, spotting the barrel of a gun in the bushes. That Secret Service agent firing 4 to 6 shots, the suspect never firing, instead fleeing on foot and then driving away. The alleged attempted assassin later caught on Interstate 95, about 45 miles away. Ryan Routh, charged with 2 federal gun charges. Voter Jack Waddell of Oregon blames the breach on the current administration.
I think this needs to be dealt with seriously. And I blame the current people in power.
Ohio State Police saying they'll protect schools in Springfield as threats continue over the furor over Haitian migrants. Gas prices continue to fall. The national average down 6 cents from last week, now at $3.18 a gallon. A liquid gas pipeline explosion in suburban Houston erupting in a tower of flame over neighborhoods. Firefighters trying to protect homes from burning. It'll take time to burn out. This is ABC News. The fun is over for American rock band Jane's Addiction after a weekend dust-up.
After Jane's Addiction founder and singer Perry Farrell attacked guitarist Dave Navarro on stage at a show in Boston over the weekend, the band is canceling the rest of the tour. Navarro, bassist Eric Avery, and drummer Stephen Perkins saying in a statement they've come to the decision, quote, due to a continuing pattern of behavior and mental health difficulties of our singer, Perry Farrell. They say they hope he finds the help he needs. In his own statement, Farrell says the weekend was incredibly difficult and he apologizes to his bandmates, saying his breaking point resulted in inexcusable behavior. But Farrell didn't say why he lashed out. Jason Athenson, ABC News, Hollywood.
The State Department says American pastor David Lin is back in the United States after his release from a Chinese prison over the weekend. The 68-year-old was sentenced to life in prison in 2006 on what the U.S. says were trumped-up fraud charges. Lin tried to open a Christian training center in Beijing when he was arrested. Dave Packer, ABC News.
I'm Terry Bell with WMDX News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WMDX website at mad.radio.
Matt Nair on air.
Wisconsin Public Radio Dodge County clerks backtrack on using drop boxes after concerns from Republican sheriff in order to prevent the perception of voter fraud.
What is he citing as any sort of proof of concern about this?
Gut feeling.
It's a gut feeling.
Yeah, inherently.
Feel it in your bones.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays at 11 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure, like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad, or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously, the best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Enrollment at the Universities of Wisconsin has grown to nearly 164,000 students this fall, the highest total since 2020. 8 campuses saw higher enrollments, but some of that growth was impacted by some 2-year branch campuses closing. Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance campaigns in Wisconsin Tuesday. James Kelly reports.
The rally is scheduled for 4:30 on Tuesday afternoon. The Eau Claire Event District also hosted a rally for Vice President Kamala Harris and Governor Tim Walz shortly after his introduction to the ticket. It's the second visit that Senator Vance has made to Eau Claire since joining former President Trump on the Republican ticket. I'm James Kelly.
Vice President Kamala Harris plans to speak in Madison Friday night. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
It's a victory Monday for the Packers. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. Green Bay got a 10-point lead in the first half and stayed ahead of Indianapolis the rest of the way, taking a 16-10 victory at Lambeau Field on Sunday. Head coach Matt LaFleur was happy to get the win.
I'm so proud of our staff, our players, just everybody sticking together because, you know, adversity is coming in every week in this league. And you face it in game. You face it, obviously, going into the game when you don't have your star quarterback. And you just got to find a way to win because at the end of the day, nobody cares.
The Packers will play Tennessee this Sunday. Milwaukee's run of extra-inning losses continued Sunday as the Brewers fell 11-10 in 10 innings to the Diamondbacks. Milwaukee took a lead in the top of the 10th but gave up 3 runs in the bottom half with closer Devin Williams left in the bullpen. It doesn't get any easier for the Brewers, who will host the Phillies and Diamondbacks for a 7-game homestand beginning tonight. Milwaukee's lead in the NL Central is at 10 games. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy, warm, and muggy tonight. Lows upper 50s. Mostly sunny, hot, and humid Tuesday and Wednesday. Highs mid-80s. Clouds return Thursday, a chance of storms late. High temps drop back into the low 80s. More rain chances for the upcoming weekend. Right now it's 80.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time when we'll take your phone calls, ask what's grinding your gears, and more of our Text to Win Go for the Green and Gold contest. Be here.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to Mad Radio WMDX, home of the John and Gordy Show.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you to cry. Brother, 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 there's far too many.
Welcome back. Tomorrow night is a Bar Band Friday here at Nightlight. Terry Barr from Max Inc. Radio will be here. And Dom Salvia will be here to talk about his new show here at Civic Media that will be on right before Nightlight from 4 to 6. So that'll be a fun show. All right, we are going to pivot here. This is exciting. I have a guest on who is a best-selling author about to join us. And he wrote a book about a gentleman that many of us here in Wisconsin are very familiar with. And he is he goes by the name of Aaron Rodgers. So, Conrad, you know who that is, right?
I believe so.
And you're a fan?
I was.
All right, fantastic. We'll see if we can change that. No, I'm kidding. Half kidding. Ian O'Connor joins us. He is the author of Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. Ian, welcome to Nightlight.
Pete, how are you?
Doing great. Thank you so much for your time tonight and being here. This is so interesting to me. I don't even kind of really know where to start with you, Ian, because Aaron Rodgers is such a fascinating character. I totally get why you wrote the book and why he interested you, but can you tell us something about him that you learned along the way and give us just sort of an overview of the book, if you would?
Yeah, by the way, Vince Lombardi coached my high school. The only place he had ever been a head coach before the Packers was St. Cecilia's High School in Englewood, New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
So I was always fascinated. He lived 8 houses away from where I grew up. So I was always fascinated by the Packers of Lombardi and Starr and wanted to write a book on a Packer at some point in my life. So Aaron got traded into my backyard. And David Moranis, of course, wrote an epic book on Lombardi. That is my favorite all-time sports book. I would have loved to have had a crack at Vince, but that didn't happen. So Aaron, I think, I was always really intrigued by him from a distance in New York, watching his career unfold. I always thought he was the best interview in the NFL, very thoughtful, engaging, and candid. But I think the one thing I found that was surprising, to be honest with you, Pete, is the amount of players I interviewed from high school through junior college, and Green Bay that absolutely admired him, respected him, liked him, loved him as a teammate and a leader surprised me. It was almost unanimous. I thought I would get more negativity, particularly based on the way he's been covered the last few years. And I even think I go back to last summer when he arrived with the Jets. Jets fans watched Hard Knocks, the show on HBO, and they thought going in that Aaron was a jerk, basically. A lot of them told me that. And they were okay with that. As long as he played like a first ballot Hall of Famer, they didn't care.
Sure.
But they could not believe coming away from that HBO show how much they thought he was a really good teammate, leader. And they were very happy that he came across that way. So that was the one thing. The teammates en masse, just their respect for him. That knocked me back. I was surprised by that.
That's really, if you hear that, which is so interesting about Aaron Rodgers, because I remember thinking, boy, it's hard not to like this guy. For a lot of his career, he was so good, and he was a good interview. And I didn't grow up in Green Bay, at least the early part of my life, but I was an Aaron Rodgers fan, and I'm not saying I'm not now, but he just seems like he's almost purposefully trying to kind of change his image and be more quirky. And then you hear the stuff about his family, and I'm like, well, that kind of speaks volumes. Like, old friends or family don't talk to him. And I'm just hearing stuff, what I hear through sports media. But has that been your experience? Does he talk to his family anymore?
Well, he did have a meeting with his father last summer at Lake Tahoe, the celebrity golf tournament. His father hadn't seen him in 9 years or talked to him, but he put himself, Ed Rogers did, in the crowd hoping Aaron would see him. And lo and behold, Aaron did see him. And he decided that day to go over and give him a hug. And Ed Rogers turned around in the gallery and he saw his son looking at him 15 feet away. And he froze because he said, I forgot what it felt like to be in my son's presence and to have him look at me.
Oh, wow.
So Aaron hugged him and said, I love you. They each said, I love you. Ed Rogers cried and they both said it was a very meaningful 30-second moment. Aaron told me for the book that he wants to have a relationship with his father again. So the family reconciliation would start there. His father was always his idol before the estrangement. And so that's the hope that there is a reconciliation with those two. It hasn't happened yet, as far as I know. But I think then hopefully the rest of the family would fall into place.
So what is it about that? Does he create these rifts, so to speak, like kind of like Michael Jordan, as an effort somehow to motivate himself, do you think, Ian? Or is that just, does he just get rubbed the wrong way easily?
The way it was described to me by his best friend, Jordan Russell, in the book, and it's funny because Jordan Russell was exiled from Aaron's life for 3 or 4 years too, and he was brought back from the place I call in the book the island. That's where Aaron puts people that he no longer wants part of his life, and it's a cold and distant place and lonely there, and Jordan Russell was one of the very few who got rescued from the island, but he said Aaron has always been hell-bent on becoming an all-time great and a master of his craft. And if you're not mission-aligned, whether you're a family member or a friend, he will remove you from his path permanently, usually. And that's just the way he is. He's not the first person I've met like that, but it's not a great character trait to have, and very unforgiving in that way. But and effectively, I think Aaron's at a place now where he's trying to figure out how to end it. And the estrangement has become its own living organism, and he doesn't know how to kill it off. So it's easier to, instead of confronting it, to just let it linger and fester and live on. So yeah, I'm hoping he does figure it out for the sake of him and it just as a human being, not an author.
Right.
I was kind of hoping in some strange way that this book would help just get some of it out in public and maybe change the dynamic of that family dysfunction. But we'll see how it plays out.
That is the voice of Ian O'Connor. He wrote the book Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. He's written several books about big-time sports figures. Ian, you mentioned before, I thought you said you talked to Rodgers, but the book is unauthorized. Were you able to interview him for the book, even though it was unauthorized, or does he want to fight you? Where does he fit in here with the book?
I had actually handed the book in, I want to say it was late January, might have been early February, and the manuscript was done. And all of a sudden, 2 weeks, and that was without him. He had not responded to my messages through the Jets, through his agent. I went directly to Aaron. I sent him my books on Belichick and Coach K.
Yeah.
And I got nothing but indifference and non-responses. But 2 weeks after I handed the book in, I got a message from the Jets saying, Aaron is now willing to see you. So I flew from New Jersey out to Los Angeles, drove to, by the way, I had a bomb scare on my flight. I got diverted to Chicago because there was a possibility of a bomb being on that plane. Thankfully, that didn't happen. But we reboarded the plane after 7 hours in Chicago. I thought I was going to miss the interview for a while there. So thankfully, I made it to his place in Malibu, beautiful home right on the Pacific Ocean. His backyard is the ocean. It's a beautiful setting. And wow. I didn't know how much time he was going to give me, but I think what happened is I had contacted so many of his friends and associates. And I think over time they said to him, the guy seems legitimate. He seems like he doesn't have an agenda. And I didn't. I had no agenda whatsoever. And I think Aaron realized that. And he was willing to engage on some sensitive subjects, particularly the family estrangement. And he made it a better book over those 2 hours. And I very much appreciated that.
Wow. That's great. Let's just say, hypothetically, if your plane had exploded and you couldn't make the meeting, do you think he would have put you on the island or would he have been able to look past that?
Oh, God. Well, I wouldn't have survived the explosion. I don't think so. I would have had bigger problems than being on Aaron's Island.
Of course.
By the way, when I was driving to Malibu, they had like record mudslides out there in February. Boy. Terrible. I was afraid I wouldn't get to his house that way either. So, but he was very, when I got there, he was very cordial. And we sat in the back. It's a hell of a backyard. I mean, it really is.
Sounds like it. Jeez.
But because it's unauthorized, he didn't owe me anything. He didn't have any editorial control. He was getting no money from this project. Not that he needed it. And so the fact that he sat there, and I would have loved 15 to 20 hours with him to tell the story of his life, but he gave me 2 hours of fact-checking. That was very valuable.
Oh, I can imagine. Does that tell you that he read the book and wanted to meet with you, that he kind of does have a plan, or he does like to be unique or mysterious in a bit? Like, it's right there in your title. If he's giving you his blessing, so to speak, without authorizing it, does that mean like kind of the way he acts is part of his plan on some level?
I think a lot of people around the NFL believe that. And he has leaned into this villainous role in the last 3 years that he was assigned by the media after COVID, after he said those four words, "Yeah, I've been immunized," when he was not vaccinated.
Right.
That really changed his entire life, never mind his image.
Right.
But he does seem to lean into that character, and he wants you to think he doesn't care what you say or what you write. But everybody I know who knows him knows that he cares an awful lot about what you say and what you write about him. So he's a fascinating guy, I have to say, very intellectually curious. And one thing that struck me was I said to him, "Hey, as a biographer, do you understand I have no choice but to write about your family estrangement? But if you feel I actually do have a choice and you don't agree with that premise, let's have that debate right now." And he said, because he's read so many books and biographies, he's a very well-read man. And he got it. He said, "I understand if you're doing my life story, you basically have no choice but to include that." And I've met superstar athletes, Derek Jeter, one of them, who never would have understood that. So I appreciated that he got it and understood I had no choice but to write about that part of his life.
That's really interesting. So Ian, was there a moment where you decided to write the book or something that happened? Was it his response to COVID or something? What was going on in his life when you started the book?
Actually, it was the trade. But I was always interested in him from afar. But I live in New Jersey. He got traded to a team that practices in New Jersey. He goes from the smallest market in the NFL to the biggest. And I thought it was the perfect time. At the end of his career, he clearly identified something with the Jets that would potentially enhance his legacy in the sport. And that is, it's a franchise that has not stepped in the Super Bowl since Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon. So that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
If I could win a championship for that Charlie Brown franchise in New York City, that is going to feel like I won three championships, not one. So, and he's right. That would be, if he pulls it off, and I've been doing this in New York for nearly 40 years, that would be the biggest New York sports story of my lifetime. And so listen, Tom Brady has 7 Super Bowl rings and Aaron just has the one. He's never closing that gap. But to win one in New York, I think would close it to some degree, because that ring would just feel a lot bigger than one.
Sure. Or at least certainly enhance his own legacy. I remember when he took over, I felt like Favre kind of got chased out of town here. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, I've seen what that guy does. You don't know what you have in Rodgers. Well, obviously they did. My guest is Ian O'Connor. His book is Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. We'll have a couple more minutes with Ian when we come back after a very quick break. This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mad Radio WMDX, home of the John and Gordy Show.
The John and Gordy Show.
Fido's gone missing. No. Oh, no.
They're eating the dogs. They're eating the pets.
There have been no credible reports.
I've seen people on television.
Let me just say,
the people on television say my TV. Dog was taken.
We've got a text here. If Trump sees it on TV, it must be true. Sir, I checked with the chef, and they said it was 100% vegan.
Weekday mornings, 6 till 8, on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Kamala Harris was so classy. What did you think of the debate? My friend and Milwaukee County Board Chairwoman Marcelia Nicholson.
As a woman of color, she ran a clinic on how to school a mediocre white man. And on the other end, you have Trump, who was angry and rattled and showed why he was unfit to be president.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
Welcome back to Nightlights. We are talking with Ian O'Connor. He's the author of Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers, who is a local legend here, obviously, in the state of Wisconsin, and still is. Ian, so Rodgers wins a Super Bowl, and now here it is 12 years later or whatever, and you thought he would have won another one. So I think you're right. Winning one with the Jets would just put him in another category.
Yeah, it's amazing. Those of us here in the New York area are very jealous of Green Bay football fans because you've gone from a first ballot Hall of Famer in Favre to a first ballot Hall of Famer in Rodgers to a guy who looks like he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer in Jordan Love. And oh, by the way, you had a quarterback by the name of Bart Starr who won five championships back in the day. So I've seen a lot of bad football played by quarterbacks in New York. So we're jealous of Green Bay fans. But yeah, it's interesting because could you imagine if the Packers ever played Aaron Rodgers and the Jets in the Super Bowl? And it's not out of the question because
right.
The Packers this year considered one of the three or four teams in the NFC that could get there. And the Jets are considered one of the three or four teams in the AFC that has the roster to get there. And they got to keep Aaron healthy this year. And let's see how the season unfolds. But Jets fans are having a hard time buying in, because they bought in last year and they got burned after four snaps in the first game. And they're having a hard time really embracing the idea that this team could go the distance.
Listen, you don't have to tell me. I grew up in Chicago, so I've been dealing with Packer quarterbacks for the better part of 30 years. what do you think people will come away with when they read this book? Will you change? Not that you're trying to, but will they have a different opinion of him, do you think? Will they cut him some slack? Or what do you think?
I think more people who have read it have said to me that they like him a little bit more after reading it than they did when they started. There have been a few that have said the opposite. And so what I tried to do is really balance out the last 3 years of coverage of Aaron, which has been mostly negative in the media. And frankly, a lot of it self-inflicted wounds and unforced errors committed by Aaron. So it really was his doing in a lot of ways. The conspiracy theories on top of the Jimmy Kimmel dust up the old COVID misdirection play that he tried to run an end around on the media, and it just blew up on him. And
Right. So
there are a lot of stories of kindness and generosity behind the scenes that his friends told me, associates told me again, that he doesn't want to publicize. And his marketing agent with CAA, Ed Berry, is frustrated. He said, Aaron's a frustrating client because I want to publicize some of these things that counter the negative and he won't let me. So I think I bring out a fair amount of those stories in the book to show to paint a complete portrait of the human being and balance it out a little bit. And also I never want to tell the reader what to decide. I want the reader to figure out good guy, bad guy, or somewhere in the middle. And that was my goal with this book.
What do you think about how crazy was, I assume Out of the Darkness comes from when he went into the cave, and I'm hearing this secondhand. I don't know exactly what he took, but as I understand it was some type of hallucinogenic or something.
Ayahuasca.
When I was a kid, a professional athlete couldn't say that. This is just crazy that he can just say to the world, yeah, I'm doing this. And people are like, oh, okay. You know, like maybe I'll try that sometime, you know? I don't know if things changed that much in sports where a guy could just be that open. Obviously they have.
But he didn't do it in this country. Ayahuasca, he did it in Peru and Costa Rica.
Okay.
He had that friend I mentioned who was exiled from his life and is now back in, Jordan Russell. He went on an ayahuasca retreat in Peru in 2019 and came back and said, Aaron, you got to try this. And he was dating Danica Patrick at the time. So he went with her to Peru, sat for some ayahuasca ceremonies and came away thinking, wow, this really was a spiritual cleansing, and I feel like a better man and even a better athlete. He said it helped him play better football. So I think he'll use it for the rest of his career, however long that lasts and beyond, really. I friends of his, more than one, have told me that they feel he is a better person since he started using ayahuasca. So it's helped his relationships, he said, with some people. Hopefully it will help at some point with his family. And yeah, I think ayahuasca is here to stay in Aaron Rodgers' life.
I think all of a sudden I feel like the only person who hasn't tried it. I don't know.
I haven't either. So.
We'll road trip.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So, all right, Ian, a couple more questions for you. You've written books about Belichick, Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski, Derek Jeter, Jack Nicklaus. Who of those icons, really? That's an impressive resume of books. Who are you most intrigued by?
Well, Pete, the obvious answer right now would be Aaron Rodgers to try to get more people to buy the book, right? I think Rodgers is really at the top of that list because Belichick was a mysterious figure, but there was a sameness about him as a character throughout his coaching career. Aaron was elusive. He was considered one of the good guys in sports up until 3 years ago. He was being praised for his stance on Kaepernick and protesting athletes, and he rebuked a fan who yelled out a anti-Muslim slur during the national anthem, right? And President Obama thanked him for doing that, and Aaron was considered a socially aware athlete that the media was praising. And then all of a sudden, the same media members who were praising him for that really destroyed him over the COVID misdirection. And really, it was a lie, frankly. And Aaron did admit to me he made a mistake there. He doesn't admit many mistakes, but he did say, I should have told my truth at the time. And I do think he would have gotten less than half the criticism he did get had he told his truth, which was he was allergic to an ingredient in Pfizer and Moderna and concerned about Johnson & Johnson side effects. Had he said that, I think things would have gone a little differently for him, but he didn't. And he's a very smart person, but sometimes he's too smart for his own good, and that was certainly one of those times.
That's interesting. And what I'm taking away from this conversation is just that he is totally capable of contrition, which he doesn't always come across that way. Like, he seems to back himself into a corner at times and then just not really back down. But it's interesting to hear that to you, he said a few of those things where he's like, you know, I made a mistake. And that's refreshing, I think, to hear that.
Ian, don't hear the all-time greats say that very often in any context. I was wrong. I'm sorry. They just don't say those things.
Yeah. I have one more question for you. I'm a writer myself, not books. I'm not smart enough to do what you do, but do you write? How do you write? Do you write every day? Do you have a set time, or do you pull a Kerouac and just get the mood catches you and you write for 4 days in a row? What's your process as a writer?
I'm better at night writing. I don't know why that is. I think many years as a sports columnist where I was writing after night games on deadline. Okay. And so I was used to really being locked in at night when the house is quiet and the office is quiet. But I generally like to gather as much material through reporting. And I interviewed 250 plus people for this book. And I didn't wait till I was done with those interviews before I started writing, or I never would have gotten done. But I would say I did about 100, 125 of those interviews and then started writing. And then, okay, I have a sense of where I'm going with this story. But generally speaking, I like to start with a scene that's present tense with an introduction in the book and then kind of take the life in chronological form. Well, in this case, I started with his grandfather, who was an amazing World War II combat pilot with an incredible record of service. There are very good reasons why he's buried in Arlington National Cemetery. But Edward Rodgers, that story had never been told. And I found all these documents, his 44 missions against the Hitler war machine. Just incredible stuff, acts of valor. And so that actually, I think, impressed Aaron, and he's talked about that publicly. And that might have been one of the reasons why he sat down with me, because he knew I was starting the book with his grandfather's service, a story that's never been told.
That's great. Ian, I wish you luck with the book. You're a four-time bestseller. You got the endorsement of Peter King, who called it a masterwork on Aaron Rodgers. I hope it's a huge success for you, and this has been really fun. I hope you come back and talk to us again sometime.
Hey, Pete, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. All right, check out the book, Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers.
You're listening to Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for Matt Nair on air.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A Secret Service agent, one hole ahead of former President Trump on the golf course Sunday, spotting the barrel of a gun in the bushes. That Secret Service agent firing 4 to 6 shots, the suspect never firing, instead fleeing on foot and then driving away. The alleged attempted assassin later caught on Interstate 95, about 45 miles away. Ryan Routh, charged with 2 federal gun charges. Voter Jack Waddle of Oregon blames the breach on the current administration.
I think this needs to be dealt with seriously. And I blame the current people in power.
Ohio State Police saying they'll protect schools in Springfield as threats continue over the furor over Haitian migrants. Gas prices continue to fall. The national average down 6 cents from last week, now at $3.18 a gallon. A liquid gas pipeline explosion in suburban Houston erupting in a tower of flame over neighborhoods. Firefighters trying to protect homes from burning. It'll take time to burn out. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Several children are injured after a school bus crash in southeast Wisconsin Monday morning. Police say an SUV ran a stop sign and knocked the bus over. Lisa Hale reports.
The Random Lake School District posted on social media that bus 17 was involved in a crash. Helicopter video showed the bus tipped over on its side. The school district said students were injured and received medical care. The families impacted have been notified. There was no information on the severity of their injuries. I'm Lisa Hale.
Efforts to expand the federal child tax credit have stalled in the U.S. Senate. The Children's Defense Fund says the bill could have lifted 400,000 children out of poverty nationwide. The Annie E. Casey Foundation says 13% of Wisconsin children live in poverty. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
This is news from WMDX Madison. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. People in Wisconsin Dells are reeling after remains found in 2 rivers were identified as Elijah Vu. He'd been missing for 7 months. He lived in Wisconsin Dells with his mom, but went missing from her boyfriend's house in Manitowoc County. Remains were found in 2 rivers, and on Friday, authorities confirmed they had found the toddler. A cause and manner of death have not been released yet. Neighbors in the Dells said he was sweet and funny, and any of them would have helped his mother out if she needed it. She and her boyfriend have been in jail for months, charged with child neglect. It's widely believed that more charges could be coming. And Madison is now under a week away from the bus rapid transit line launch. Now is a good time to get used to those red bus-only lanes on your commute, and you can figure out your route if you take the bus every day. You can also get the new digital money cards, FastFare. The BRT system officially begins on Sunday. And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. This is WMDX News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy, warm, and muggy tonight. Lows upper 50s. Mostly sunny, hot, and humid Tuesday and Wednesday. Highs mid-80s. Clouds return Thursday, a chance of storms late. High temps drop back into the low 80s. More rain chances for the upcoming weekend. Currently at 75 degrees.
Most people out here think that taking care of one another is important. And most people would step up for a neighbor going through a tough time. Most people around here help out friends and family when they need it. But the funny thing is, most of us won't look for help when we need it. Talk to someone if you're struggling with mental health. Because most people out here really care. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
Troy, our grand prize winner from that Just a Bit Outside the Movie Text to Win contest out in beautiful Mount Horeb.
You gotta go see this movie. You know, you'll laugh, you'll cry. I know that sounds cliche, but it's true.
It is.
The no narrator was perfect for this movie, and that's what made the movie. Yeah. Seeing the players in their own words telling these stories.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our next show, we'll talk to Joanne Berg about the Monroe Street Festival.
And we'll be delving back into the world of Idiocracy.
Join us.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 till 8.
Zero. Drake from Green Bay says Haley's career could be short-lived if she hawk Tua's on the studio microphone. Well, hopefully they have a cover on it, Drake. I am so listening to that podcast, and I'm going to ask her, I'm going to plead with Haley to lower the cost of her fan club, because we would love to join, but I ain't paying no $200. All right. This is exciting. We got great guests tonight. Rose Abdu from the show Hacks is here at 7:20. And right now I'm excited. I've wanted to have this next guest on for a while. She's very funny. She is a Wisconsin native who has been on all kinds of national TV shows and podcasts. She also spent time in Minnesota, as I understand it. So she's probably conflicted. We'll have to get to the bottom of that. Please welcome Mary Mack. Mary, hi.
Oh, hi. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I recognize.
This is a special presentation from Civic Media. Civic Media is proud to be a part of the Cap Times Idea Fest in Madison. Tonight's broadcast is a live one-on-one discussion with Nancy Pelosi, the first female Speaker of the House. We'll hear what she thinks about the state of politics and the presidential election. Now, live to the Cap Times Idea Fest in Madison.
Let's have a plan. That brainstorming was many months before release of the Speaker's great new book titled The Art of Power, My Story as America's First Woman Speaker of the House. And long before the summer of intense notoriety for her role about the ascent of Vice President Kamala Harris to the presidential nomination. I was able to interview Speaker Pelosi for my column last month, and we talked about many things, including her relationships through time with some of Wisconsin's most famous political names. We're lucky to have as moderator tonight an award-winning national political journalist who has known the Speaker for decades. Karen Tumulty is a Washington Post associate editor and a columnist who writes about national politics for the Washington Post, and importantly, has grandchildren in Madison. So that's just going to go off my notes here a second and thank David Marinus, who seems to have brought half of the Washington Post newsroom to Madison. Thank you, David. The former editor Marty Baron in the first year, I'll never forget that. Karen has degrees from the University of Texas at Austin and the Harvard Business School, Texas grad. Before joining the Post in 2010, she worked for the Time magazine, and before that for the Los Angeles Times, and it's an honor to have her here tonight. I want to take a minute to sincerely thank our sponsors and partners without whom this pretty cool week, I think, wouldn't be possible. Epic Systems, Exact Sciences, HealthX Ventures, UW Health, the Carbone Cancer Center, Madison Gas and Electric, the Ascendium Education Group, and the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Co-sponsors include the University Research Park, the Century House, Overture Center for the Arts, the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, the Wisconsin Historical Society, the Madison Community Foundation, Cargo Coffee, the La Follette School of Public Affairs, Madison College, Leopold's Book Bar Cafe, and the Forward Theater Company. Thank you. We really do very much appreciate them. Our partners include Hinckley Productions, Civic Media, which is broadcasting this event tonight on the stations across the state. I believe there are 20 stations across the state, the Wisconsin State Journal, and Madison.com. One more note, which is repeated from my earlier session, so forgive me. Our host, the University of Wisconsin-Madison, is committed to freedom of speech and freedom of expression as an essential part of their education mission. It is our expectation that you allow the speaker's presentation to occur without disruption. Any disruptions to the event will be handled swiftly by security. So, with that, I'd like to hand it over to the aforementioned Ben Wickler to take the introduction from here. Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Madison. Could we give another round of applause to Paul Fanlon and to the whole team here at Idea Fest at the Capital Times here in Shannon Hall? What a gift to our community this institution is. I'm profoundly humbled and honored to be able to introduce tonight's guest of honor, and especially to do it in this setting, in this venue. I grew up coming to talks here as a kid, growing up in Madison. I had a dream opportunity to serve on the Capital Times student editorial board when I was 12, which I didn't know that not every newspaper has a student editorial board, but the Capital Times did. This is a place where getting involved in politics and public life makes people more idealistic, not less. And that's different from a lot of politics in a lot of places. But what I want to speak to tonight in introducing our guest is the fact that Speaker Emerita Pelosi, twice Speaker Pelosi, path-breaking, world-changing Speaker Pelosi, is a leader who makes the people around her more idealistic, to believe in the power of democracy, who to make people believe in their own capacity to create change, at the same time as she wields the art of power at a level that our country has never seen. She grew up seeing what this was like. Her father was the mayor of Baltimore and a former congressman. She moved to California. She had five children. She served as the state party chair in California. And then when her children had grown, she ran for Congress and then ran for leadership, became the speaker in 2007, became the speaker again in the Democratic leader in 2017, and the speaker again in 2019. And it's step after step after step has faced some of the most frightening and impossible crucibles in American politics, faced a Republican Party that was bent on destroying our democracy and undermining the fundamental idea of America at so many steps, and a Democratic Party that, I can say, not always the easiest to deal with. And I, like so many of us, saw from afar her amazing work, and then I got to move to Washington, D.C. My wife worked in the United States Senate. We had a close friend who was working for Speaker Pelosi in the House, and I remember asking her once, how is it that she never loses a vote? How is it that she's able to figure out a way to pass all the bills through, to count the bills so perfectly, to bring people around who are thinking in so many different directions? And our friend, who was watching her in awe, often in close quarters in professional settings, said, the thing about Speaker Pelosi is that she calls people to act on their values. She said she connects, she understands people, she knows what's happening in their lives. I came to have the enormous luck of getting to work with her directly, and she would ask first about how my kids are doing. She asked the same thing when I saw her tonight. She would ask to see baby pictures. And then she would know people's why. She always tells people, know your why. Know why you're doing this. Because if you know your fundamental, to your core, the values that are propelling you to do this work, then you can withstand the heat and the attacks and the pressure and the lies, because you can stand firm on the ground of your values. And her genius, the genius of her leadership, is identifying the values that make people ready to go through anything to make the change that has to happen. We might not be a democracy today in the United States if it wasn't for Speaker Pelosi. We know to a certainty that tens of millions of people would not have health care today if it wasn't for Speaker Pelosi. We very well could not have ended two very long wars if it weren't for Speaker Pelosi's leadership. I was very involved in the fight against the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. And while people talk about John McCain and that moment he put his thumb down, the only reason we got to that point is because somehow, from the minority in the House, Speaker Pelosi gummed up the works and stopped the Republicans from repealing the Affordable Care Act on day one. They failed vote after vote, pulled votes off the floor, because she united Democrats and the country and divided the opposition. based on the fundamental value that every person deserves dignity and respect and health care in the United States of America. She exercised that leadership. Now, you read and you see what she does on the national stage, in national press, in the halls of Congress and the White House. What I didn't realize until I got to see it firsthand is that part of the magic of what she does is she engages the grassroots. She believes in organizing down to her core. She, when I was at MoveOn.org working against the repeal of the ACA, I got to join conference calls that she would have every week with grassroots organizations across the country. And I don't know how she fit this in while leading Democrats in the House of Representatives and out negotiating the Republicans and Donald Trump. She would often be eating ice cream during the calls, which is a very Wisconsin approach to conference calls that we strongly approve of here in the Dairy State. And she would ask everyone to share what they were doing, and she would appreciate them, and she would tell them how much it mattered. She would say, like a mantra, you might hear it tonight, you have to own the ground. You have to own the ground. You have to organize at the grassroots level to bring the pressure up from below. That's an idea that is grounded in a respect for democracy and an understanding the art of power in a democracy, that it all ultimately comes from people. I decided in 2018 to move home to Madison, and I told Speaker Pelosi about it and said, it's the best place in the world to raise your kids. And I had three kids, and my wife and I, we moved back across the country. And I left, you know, Washington, D.C. I was involved in all these policy fights. Speaker Pelosi never left our side here. At every step in the long fight that we have had against the forces of authoritarianism in our state, she's been raising money, she's been spreading the word, she's been joining conference calls with Democratic Party of Wisconsin organizers to fire up volunteers, to call on all of us to own the ground. And this year, when everyone in this room has a superpower in the form of your ballot, and your time, and your dollars, and your work to ensure that democracy survives, Speaker Pelosi, as she is in every battleground state and every battleground House district across the country, she is with us here in our fight because she knows that our work is grounded in the same values that she has exemplified and called upon everyone else to exemplify throughout her career. She calls on us to live up to the idea of democracy, to be a country where everyone matters. And that is a gift to us that we have to use. So let's give a gigantic round of applause to Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Listening to the Cap Times Idea Fest in Madison featuring Nancy Pelosi on Civic Media.
Madison, you seem to have a few fans here. So I do want to congratulate you on the book, which came out 5 weeks ago. It made it to number one on the New York Times list the first week, and it's been living in that neighborhood ever since. And if you have had even a minute to turn on a television here, you will know that you are in a swing state. And we are today 50 days away from that election. And here in Wisconsin, the ballots go out starting on Thursday. So how are you feeling about this election, Madam Speaker?
Well, first, thank you, Karen. What an honor it is for me to be here with each and every one of you. It's such a treat for me to be interviewed, moderated by, that's probably the moderation voice of Karen Tumulty. She is, in her own right, the star worthy of any audience to hear her views on any subject. I feel very honored. But then I found out that she has grandchildren in Madison. So, Karen's coming. How wonderful. Then I know the great magnet of grandchildren. Thank you, Karen. I'm honored that we're participating together here. And again, to be in this historic location, I want to make sure I have all of this right. Shannon Hall Memorial Union of the University of Wisconsin, Madison. The Capital Idea, Capital Times Idea Fest. Hopefully we'll have some ideas to fest. Thank you, Paul Fanlund, for your leadership, and David Swiffle. He said I could say Swiffle or Swiffle, for his starting all of this some decades ago. I do want to say what a special honor it is for me that Mayor Doyle and his wife Jessica are here this evening, because they... Stand up. I was here earlier with Peter Bark, whom I'm hoping will help us win the House, but we're not talking about it, Peter. Here's this like Kathy. As the evening goes on, we'll acknowledge others who are with us. But first, I want to, again, thank you all for being here to hear Karen's question. Did I notice that this was a swing state? Came in, turned on the TV, one commercial after another, if you don't need any other indication. But Wisconsin is a great state. You have sent great representation to the Congress of the United States. Speaking from my own side of the aisle, we're just so proud, so very, very proud of your senator. She's just remarkable. You know which one I'm talking about. Started in the House, moved on to the Senate, and we're Mark Pecan's district. We have in Milwaukee, we have, the most remarkable congresswoman. She's just wonderful. But anyway, you know all of these people. No need to me to say that, but it's really important for the country to make a decision in a few weeks, 8 weeks. And Wisconsin is the heartland of America. And I want all of you to know your power in all of this. I think you do. And to know your responsibility in all of this. What we're trying to do is to have a campaign that brings people together. We cannot become that which we are fighting. We have to try to bring people together. I have this pin, it's a flag pin, and on it says, one country, one destiny. One country, one destiny. And those are the words that were embroidered in Abraham Lincoln's coat the night that he passed away. He had on that coat. But that was his vision, and that's what he did, bringing our country together by winning the Civil War. We have a challenge now because of the divisions in our country. But I'm here in Wisconsin because of your importance. Not that it isn't pleasant to come here, and I've been here many times. But at this time in particular, you will see so much focus, so much listening to you, learning from you about the vision you see for our country. Now, I don't know in this historic hall if we're able to talk politics, so I won't go there unless the question directs me there. However, know your power. Just win, baby.
just win, baby. Well, so how confident are you that come election night, the Democrats are going to have a good night, both for the White House and the House and the Senate?
Oh, we can talk politics. I was being civic-minded with flag, link, and all. Here's the thing, and I say this with confidence and from firsthand experience. For the good of our country, it is absolutely essential that Hakeem Jeffries has the gavel on January 6th. Mm. the day that Congress votes to certify the election, to accept the results of the Electoral College. I say firsthand because I had the gavel on January 6th, but more important than that, we had the votes in the House to overcome the massive vote against from the Republican side of accepting those. So in terms of that night, let's hope that we will know that night. That's why I say, let's win, but I always say, let's win big, baby, so that it's conclusive. But whatever it is, the result is one that we, as those who honor and uphold the Constitution of the United States, respect the results of the election of the American people. We wish that everyone would share that view and that commitment to the Constitution. I think, talking about it, I take nothing for granted in politics. This is a very close race. I think Kamala Harris will win overwhelmingly Kamala Harris and Tim Walz will win the popular vote in the country. But that doesn't elect a president. Our founders had a different idea about how that would work, and we honor that Constitution. So we have to, until we can change that, we have to make sure that she does what they do win, because so much is at stake. This isn't an election that we would have against George W. Bush or Mitt Romney or Bob Dole, John McCain. We have an election, we have an outcome, we go to work, we try to find compromise, and we work for the good of the people. This is a different election. This is an election where not only the differences of opinion are on the ballot, and that's legitimate. That's a democracy. You have differences of opinion. You fight it out as to the role of government and where you are on the spectrum from right to left. That's who we are. But when there's a question of the integrity of our elections, when there's a question of the sanctity of the ballot, when there's a question of the democracy in our country, that puts the election at a higher stake, one that we must win, and win in a way that is unifying, respectful of all views. Whoever wins is president and vice president of the United States, not of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, but also that recognizes differences, the beauty of differences of opinion in our country. And I would hope that at some point there are those who will take back the Republican Party. It's a grand old party. It's done great things for America, provided great leadership to our country. It has been hijacked, in my view, and by, I won't go into that unless you ask me, but but there is a great deal at stake. So let us try to, again, honoring the vision of our founders of this great country, the sacrifice of our men and women in uniform who fight for our freedom again and again and again, and democracy elsewhere. And importantly, the aspirations of our children. We have to go forward in a way that preserves our democracy, supports and defends our Constitution. Again, we must win the election.
You know, you just look at the events of the past week, and there's really not a lot to look at and find optimism that politics could ever return to something that even resembles normal. I mean, we've had the Republican nominee and the Republican vice presidential nominee slandering legal Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio. Yesterday, we had a second assassination attempt on former President Trump. I mean, when you look at these events, when you hear sort of the no-holds-barred rhetoric,
Where do you find hope?
Well, I find hope in the American people because I believe in the goodness of the American people. People say to me, where is hope? I say, hope is where it always has been, sitting right there between faith and charity. We believe in the goodness of our, the greatness of our country. We believe in the goodness.